Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This episode is sponsored by Safe, the account abstraction leader on Ethereum.
I'm a huge fan of seeing Web3 through the lens of ownership, because that's the core part of what it enables. A new internet to be built where users are owners, users can participate, and that ranges from owning a piece of music from a creator to articles to just tokens that allow to participate in governance of protocols or platforms. That's exactly where then self-custody comes into play, because if you want to be an owner, it also comes with responsibilities of actually having control over these assets. And that's then where wallets are needed, because they enable users to really do freely whatever they want.
Welcome to this special bonus episode of Gen C. We are here today with Lucas Shore. Lucas is the co-founder of Safe. Safe is a product that we use here at CoinDesk. We focus a lot on security and making sure that our assets are safe and that we have the most advanced tools in order to control our systems. So we're going to find out all about Safe with Lucas here. So Lucas, first off, for our audience, can you just simply describe what Safe is?
Sure. And thanks for having me, Sam. And very glad to hear that you use Safe yourself. So essentially, Safe is all about making sure that smart accounts become the default user accounts in Web3. So traditionally, most users of Web3, they use something that's called externally owned accounts. That's like the typical seed phrase, private key that some might know that you have to write down and keep safe, because if you lose it, you lose access to an entire wallet. And what Safe does is it leverages smart accounts. That means it creates user accounts that are based on smart contracts rather than these EOAs. And that makes these user accounts programmable. So we can have much more secure setups for the users, and it just allows for much more flexibility as well. So today, Safe is used by a wide range of types of users. That ranges from DAOs that run their DAO treasuries on Safe to like Web2 brands like Budweiser or Reddit, and even individuals like Vitalik Buterin himself, who has most of his ETH holdings on a Safe wallet. Safe, in a sense, is more infrastructure. So it actually provides tooling for builders of wallets and applications to leverage smart accounts. But there's also Safe Wallet, a separate wallet that is in a way a showcase of what Safe smart accounts can enable, and is often like a starting point for many that have their first touch points with Safe.
So Lucas, I want to go a little bit deeper into that. You know, the way that we've been using it is whenever we do sort of NFT sales, that kind of stuff, we have a Safe wallet. Multiple people have to approve transactions. So it's one in which not one single person can execute. And it adds for us an extra layer of security, but also it keeps the people who are the decision makers in power to make decisions, but no one can make those uniquely. Was that sort of what your thought process was when you founded the company?
In a way, yes, because Safe is a spin-off from another company, that's Gnosis. And Gnosis, when they did their ICO back in 2017, they actually raised quite some crypto, and they had to have a secure way to safeguard these assets. And you don't want to put all this crypto on like a single private key where it's very easy for it to be compromised and the funds to be gone. So Gnosis started building an internal tool that was back then called the Gnosis Multisig, which essentially allows multiple people to co-sign on transactions to have a better security setup for managing digital assets. It Gnosis then open sourced this tool, and it happened that half of the industry started using it themselves. And that just then led to it not just being an internal tool, but actually like a full team that was responding to feature requests, that was continuing to maintain the solution and also to make it more use case agnostic. So actually building it out to a proper like smart account framework, which then allows not just teams to manage funds together, but is also providing security and UX benefits for any kind of user group, be it like individuals, be it DAOs, et cetera.
So Lucas, I mean, in our experience, we see a lot of people are still using hot wallets, just like, for example, a MetaMask attached to their web browser. There are those who are using a cold storage device, kind of a hardware key that's attached. With Safe, though, you have smart accounts, you have pass keys. Could you just like talk about the differences between that and sort of less secure options that other people are using?
Many people use these EOAs, as mentioned before. And the tricky part is like you have this private key, you have to keep it secure and secure enough that no one else gets access to it. Because if someone does, they can just transfer all the money out, but also not too secure that you forget yourself where you stored the private key, or you don't have access, you don't lock yourself out in a way. So that's always the challenge about private key management. And what Safe enables is that it creates these smart accounts, which are programmable. So we could actually program it to behave in different ways. That could be that you say it's like a multi-signature wallet, which is controlled by multiple private keys. So you don't have this single point of failure. But you can also add additional features or support other types of private keys, because regular user accounts on Ethereum, they all use these like ECDSA curve, like a very specific type of private key, which then needs to be backed up with this 12 words seed phrases. And you might want to use something that's more easy to use for regular users, such as passkeys. So passkeys is actually something that's becoming more and more adopted by Web2 companies as well, because also Web2 companies, they don't like passwords. They need to recover them, and it's all just a UX nightmare. So they want to have a better way for users to authenticate themselves. And their bigger players such as Apple and Google push forward the standard for private keys that are passkeys and that are now often used as a two-factor authentication method, for example. Also, when you sign up on GitHub now, it's actually the default way that GitHub suggests to do 2FA. And the cool thing with smart accounts is that you can actually use this very type of private keys to authenticate yourself in Ethereum. So you can have a smart account which is controlled by a specific passkey that you set and that you back up on your 1Password. And that's just much more easy to also explain to people who might not be that familiar with private key management and so on. So that's, from my point of view, one of the major unlocks that's coming to Web3 is having users very easily sign up and create their wallets without them having to learn why do I have this seed phrase and how do I back it up securely and so on.
Yeah, one of the things I really love about the idea of programmable accounts is the idea that you could have a builder, a founder, someone who is your finance person in your company, and they leave. And then instead of having to worry that they still have access because this is sort of, you know, tied to their specific wallet, you can basically make a consensus judgment to remove and add someone else. I think there's a lot of flexibility in what that does. I want to take a little bit of a step back, Lucas, because I think when you and I were first talking, we were talking about how Chris Dixon has like sort of discussed this idea that we are really have entered the ownership era. And I think the idea of digital asset ownership, which I think is only going to get more and more over the next bunch of years, it really does have to have brands and startups and individuals sort of think differently about their security and about sort of protecting their assets. So how do you think the kind of ownership economy is going to evolve? And what do these companies need to know that they are, as they're sort of preparing for the new economy in ownership?
Yeah, I love Chris Dixon's book, Read, Write, Own, who recently came out. And it's going exactly into that. And I'm a huge fan of seeing Web3 through the lens of ownership, because that's the core part of what it enables. A new internet to be built where users are owners, users can participate. And that ranges from owning a piece of music from a creator to articles to just tokens that allow to participate in governance of protocols or platforms. It just puts the user at the center and it gives them new capabilities. That's exactly where then self-custody comes into play, because if you want to be an owner, it also comes with responsibilities of actually having control over these assets, these digital assets. And that's then where wallets are needed, because they enable users to really do freely whatever they want. It's not dependent on some custodial platform to support the features or the capabilities they want to do with what they own. One key thing that's also interesting is that smart accounts enable hybrid ownership. So right now you might have a way that users have a wallet that they fully control, or they have their digital assets on an exchange. But with smart accounts, it's actually possible to have both or be more of a spectrum between self-custody and third-party custody. For example, you could onboard to a game and you can just use it normally, and the game could issue digital assets, in-game assets, and they might be in control of the game developer, of the platform. And then over time, the user might decide, okay, I might want to do certain things that the game developer doesn't allow me within the game. So I want to take it maybe to an NFT platform. I want to auction the asset off or something. And then the game could allow to move to a hybrid custody setup, which then means that the user might create like a passkey that they can sign transactions with. And they can then move these assets to an NFT platform and sign an auction. And even to an extent where then the user might at some point say, okay, the game was great, but I don't want to continue having someone else have ownership over my digital assets. So I might just cut the cords and I go full self-custody. So smart accounts allow these movements between what was so far considered like a dichotomy. And yeah, that's what I found quite interesting.
And then let's get into some use cases, Lucas. So you mentioned earlier, Reddit and Budweiser are using Safe. Also, I know Shopify and Stripe are using Safe. You know, these are some very large and very dynamic brands who have dipped their toes into the blockchain ecosystem. So how are those brands using it? And why should brands like that consider having a Safe account?
Yeah, so we see more and more brands actually doing marketing activations within Web3 to associate themselves also with the culture that comes with Web3. And there they always face the challenge, like they could have like a custodial setup where they have digital assets on, but this very much limits what they can do as a marketeer, for example, with these digital assets, because whatever the custodial setup allows you to do is what's there. And then there's this other option where they say, now, for example, Shopify, we spin up a wallet and we, for example, buy an NFT that we want to make our profile picture on X or something like this. And then the problem is, okay, who actually generates the private key within the company? How's it back up? What if there's a transaction being signed that shouldn't be signed? And the weird thing about private keys is you don't know who actually signed the transaction. So it could be anyone who had access to the private key. That's where Web2 brands then usually default to Safe as a viable option, because that allows them to set up what's usually in also B2B software known as like hierarchies or permissions management, where they can delegate certain control to different people in the company or have at least multiple people sign off on certain actions. You mentioned a few that use Safe today. Budweiser, for example, they bought quite an expensive NFT, which was an ENS domain, br.eth, and they put it on X as a profile picture, and they got quite some attention from the Web3 community there. And because that ENS name was like 100K, obviously they needed a very secure setup to safeguard that. So they ended up using Safe for that. Another example is Sotheby's, so the auction platform. They used Safe when they auctioned off the most expensive NFT to date. That was the Goose, which was bought by Punk6529 in the end. And they also were controlling that NFT through a Safe. And actually, funnily enough, the buyer, Punk6529, was also using Safe to buy it. So it was a Safe-to-Safe swap in the end.
I love that. And also, when you think of a brand like Shopify, who also enables merchants to take crypto as well as build on top of Web3 projects with token gating, you could see also a fair amount of financial assets coming through and having to be secured. So I assume with a brand like a Shopify, you're not going to just sort of leave that in a hot wallet or even a wallet that a single person controls. The idea that you have to have multiple decision makers when you want to do anything with that, you know, whether it's an NFT like the Goose or a CryptoPunk, or it's what could be 7 or 8 figures of digital currency, I think it's important to ensure that you have all the protections in place, especially in today's world where we know hackers are everywhere.
Exactly.
So I want to turn to WorldCoin. I was in Paris last summer and, you know, I got my iris scanned for a proof of humanity opportunity. You know, this is a company that Sam Altman is behind. It's been getting a lot of attention. And when we spoke last, you said that every WorldCoin user, which I guess I'm one of, also now has a Safe account, whether they know it or not. And so I would love for you to sort of explain how that works as well.
So WorldCoin right now is actually the project deploying more Safe accounts than anyone else. So I think right now it's about 10 million or so. And probably 99.9% of the WorldCoin users have no clue that they use Safe, which I think is actually great. So I see Safe often as a similar infrastructure like Linux. Probably people use Linux 10 times per day and they actually don't know they do it because it's something that's usually abstracted away from the user. It powers ATMs or other systems people interact with, but it's very invisible to users. And here that's similar, where WorldCoin uses Safe for better user experience. So they sponsor all the transactions from their users, which requires smart accounts, but also for the security benefits, because obviously if you have your identity, your digital identity on an account, you really don't want to lose that. So they use smart accounts there in a way that they can recover the user accounts if they lose access and just make sure that it's the most secure possible setup for the users.
Amazing. And then the final use case that I sort of really went deep on when preparing for this conversation was going back to Constitution DAO. You know, this was for our audience. This is when, you know, over 17,000 people kind of all contributed money. They were trying to buy a copy of the US Constitution. And I know that group also utilized Safe. So it made me wonder about the idea of a responsibility that you have to collective action. When you have 17,000 people who are all trying to do a thing and they're all contributing time, energy, attention, and digital currencies, you can't sort of be lackluster about how you're approaching that type of a project. So it sounds like when we were discussing that Constitution DAO utilized Safe as well as a protective measure with, I think if I'm not mistaken, it was over $40 million at the time. Unfortunately, they came in second in the bidding, but I still think that was like a really interesting way to think of also how Safe can keep all of these people safe. Is that the right assessment?
In a way, I think the security aspect is one that played a role there. But what Safe also is it's an excellent on-chain coordination tool. So Constitution DAO, it was like a core team that had this idea, this crazy idea, let's buy the US Constitution. Let's crowdfund this with thousands of people and then participate in an auction. And for this, they set up Safe as a multi-signature wallet first, which was controlled then by a bunch of people in this core team. But the idea was like that the control over the Safe was then handed over to the community. So they issued a token, which is the people token, which then was set up in a way that it controls the Safe directly. And that's the power of Safe, is really that it's reprogrammable. So we can set up one system first, but then move to a different system as the needs of the project progress. And here in Constitution DAO's example, they then had like a platform snapshot, which allows for token voting. So they then handed over the power, so to say, to the community. And then that allowed to coordinate the community. How should we approach this auction? Like, what should we do with the Constitution? Do governance votes? And then in the end, when the auction didn't go as expected, there was also coordination around what should we do with these assets now. That's something we've seen quite a lot, as in just a bunch of people coming together and rallying a community around a shared cause. One other example was Ukraine DAO. So when the invasion of Ukraine happened, there was like a bunch of people coming together and saying, we need to raise funds, we need to support critical purposes and help people on the ground where needed. And it was like within a few days, I think it was like few million dollars that were raised and then coordinated within this Ukraine DAO, which was also Safe, and that allowed then the community to say, to decide how these funds should be used. And that's just something with traditional tools, it's not possible to really have this very fast, efficient way for coordination of people who don't know each other, because that's a key thing both behind the Constitution DAO, but also Ukraine DAO. The people didn't know each other. There was some level of trust needed, which was then replaced by this smart account that actually allowed for like trustless coordination of assets. And that's a very exciting thing that's possible only with Web3.
Lucas, a lot of our listeners are building brands in Web3, whether they're, you know, part of a group at a Web2 company or they're entrepreneurs themselves. You've been doing this for a while. I'm sort of interested in your advice, your insights on how to build a Web3 native brand, because I still think there's a lot of skepticism whether blockchain truly is the underpinning of Web3. Or is it just one pillar of a suite of technologies? How do you think of your own brand when you're building it? And are there sort of tricks that you've learned that have helped sort of generate that idea of trust and that people are sort of willing to put their money and their time into the Safe products?
Yeah, I do think brand is something that's completely under-indexed in our industry, as many people think that like decentralized protocols, they don't have a brand the same way maybe an Adidas or an Apple has. And there's some truth to that, but I think that still brand is hugely important for decentralized protocol. And even if you look at, for example, Ethereum, Ethereum clearly has a brand. Like that's all the shiny colors and unicorns and the nerdiness, but it's also the reliability, the resilience, the stability that you associate with that. And that brand decides in the end what type of community a protocol attracts, what type of user that want to use this protocol, and it has how the people interact within that community, what type of rituals they have, types of events and so on. So it's hugely important to really have a brand that stands for the core values of the protocol and the type of community that the protocol should attract. And usually this brand is at least initially very much driven also by the founding team of a protocol, because they define what are the values, what is it what we long-term want to build, what's our vision as a project. But over time, it actually evolves more into a headless brand where, I mean, you can argue Ethereum, obviously there's Vitalik Buterin who plays a critical role in representing the protocol, but it's many other community members that have become thought leaders that carry forward the values of the protocol and contribute to the future direction of it. And these headless brands is really what makes Web3. And these are more challenging to build than traditional Web2 brands because they require a lot of advocacy and less control over the brand. So it's much more work really to maintain consistency in the community, but they're also much more powerful because they don't depend on spokespersons or they don't depend on actions of one core team. A different thing that I would maybe recommend to Web3 marketeers is that Web3 is super fast paced. So you see this when reading X posts, like 1 week, everyone is talking about restaking. Another week, everything is about DPIN. And then the discussion moves towards data availability. And it's very critical to be, as a brand, as a project, very close to the different trends. It's very important to track what micro and macro trends are out there in Web3 and how they impact your own project. And whenever possible, it should be a goal to associate your project with specific topics that are discussed in the community, but in a way that it shouldn't feel artificial.
I also think, Lucas, what you just said really reminds me that whether it was the beginning of the web, whether it was the beginnings of social, that there's a lot of people who will jump in and quickly announce that they are now building the next big project, big brand, big company. But it is those who have a long-term view and a long-term commitment of what they're building. And frankly, the technical expertise that seem to last in the end, right? And so Web3 is actually not that much different from sort of tech evolution of the past. Those who are sort of building brands for the long haul, who are also like really understanding that UX and consumer technology is an iterative business, those seem to have the most success. And I know you guys have been doing this for a while, so I think that is a great point. So for those who do want to understand what it's like to get a Safe account, give us like, you know, what is it like to onboard into Safe if you want to run your company on Safe?
I mean, the easiest way is to just go to safe.global, which is the landing page of Safe, and to explore the ecosystem there. Because as mentioned, Safe is infrastructure at first. So there's many different tools that you can use depending on your needs, whether you're building a DAO, whether that's more like a team use case or you're an individual, and whether you have more or less technical expertise, there's something out there for everyone. When in doubt, you can start using Safe Wallet, which is also linked on that landing page, which then allows you to onboard with a Safe account and then explore Web3 apps through that. So there's like this app store within Safe Wallet that you can use. I know it's like 150 different Web3 apps that are listed there and that then allow you to do whatever you want. And you usually start off with a wallet that you control yourself, and then you can add multiple signers. For example, if you're a team and you want to get your colleagues involved, then you can do that there as well. If you're someone that has never owned a wallet before, I would recommend one of the projects that are building on Safe, like Nest Wallet, which very much optimized for abstracting all the technical complexities and optimize for individuals as users. There's a bunch of them. Also, Seal Wallet, for example, is a good one that you could try, and which also makes onboarding easier because you can use passkeys, so you don't need to back up a seed phrase.
And then finally, Lucas, I saw a tweet you put out last week, which I was I was just frankly surprised about, and I again wanted to go deeper and learn a bit more from you. You said that Gnosis Pay, which is the product that you guys offer, which is in essence a Visa card that's tied to your Safe account, it allows people to be able to spend their crypto in real world and in real time. You know, it made me think of all of the like athletes who are being paid in crypto these days. A lot of people still, I think, look at crypto to some degree as a buy and hold strategy or a buy and trade strategy. There's not that many people, I think, who are today thinking about it as a, you know, buy and spend or acquire and spend. But what you said was there's about $150,000 per week right now going through Gnosis Pay. So this sort of solves one of the bigger challenges, which is how do you spend crypto? And I just wondered if you could take us a little bit through the thinking of Gnosis Pay, but also are you foreseeing something in the near future where people are also more comfortable spending crypto the same way they would spend cash?
Yeah, so Gnosis Pay is a solution built on Safe. So they leverage Safe smart accounts. And the goal is to really make crypto accessible in like day-to-day payments use cases. So it can be compared, Gnosis Pay can be compared in a way to how Skype approached the market, where the end goal was that people just all have Skype accounts and they just call themselves via voice over IP. But the reality was that in the beginning, not that many people have Skype accounts. So they bootstrapped this in a way that they said, now, if you have a Skype account, you can also call into the landline of different countries, which was way cheaper than doing a regular call. And this then meant that you as a Skype user could call anyone you want, essentially. And that made you use Skype more. And then over time, more people use Skype. And then at some point, it just makes sense to just use voice over IP and to just call via the internet rather than via the landline. And in a way, Gnosis Pay works similarly, where it's the idea of people have crypto. They want to spend crypto. But not everyone accepts crypto as a payment. So we need to somehow bootstrap this period until crypto is so ubiquitous that you can just send crypto to your friend or use it to pay in the store. And Gnosis Pay solved this by actually building a bridge to the traditional financial system, to the Visa network, where they can issue cards, which from a user experience, they behave exactly like any other credit card. So you go to a store, you just tap, you pay, there's no additional latency, there's no gas fees involved there. And what actually happens under the hood is that your crypto is held in a self-custodial account. So only when you actually pay at the merchant terminal, that's when the crypto is off-ramped at very reasonable fees and actually lower than most off-ramping providers. And this means that technically, you could have your crypto, I know, yield farming in a lending protocol up to the very second that you pay your coffee at Starbucks. And that just means that you don't have to think about Starbucks accepting crypto. It just happens automatically. And this is then the first step to having crypto just really more adopted as a payments tool, first from the user side, and then hopefully over time also from a recipients or merchant side.
Yeah, I mean, I think what excites me about that is I believe the more crypto adoption we get, the more the technology will be abstracted away. And so a common use case such as a Visa card, which all of us have, is accepted worldwide in millions and millions of locations. It's a very easy way to sort of hide the wires, as it were, when it comes to crypto. All you do is tap. And if you have the funds in your account, you pay. So I think that there is something really nice about that, which allows any brand, whether it's a CoinDesk or others, to also be able to accept it like a credit card, right? So it does mean it's a much easier use case. Lucas, thank you for spending so much time with us today. Again, Lucas Shore, co-founder of Safe. We'll put all of the details of how to check out Safe in the show notes, but thank you for spending time with us today.
Thank you very much, Sam.
Safe is enabling ownership for all with smart accounts. With over $100 billion in total value stored across over 14 networks, Safe accounts are embedded everywhere, including DeFi Saver, WorldCoin, Dracula App, and more. Build and use the most battle-tested smart account in Ethereum. Visit safe.global.